Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson, and in this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Leah Martin, the serial entrepreneur who runs both Time Doctor and Staff.com, two of the most popular time tracking and productivity software platforms in the world today. Even more exciting, both companies were founded as remote-first organizations, meaning that they have no physical location, allowing employees to work from anywhere in the world. And this focus has led Liam and his team to organizing a conference called Running Remote, the largest live event that's all about scaling a remote business. Now, originally from Canada, Liam grew up playing hockey and eventually made his way into competitive ice dancing, where he became an internationally ranked skater. After trading in his skates for a stack of books, Liam went on to get his master's degree in sociology, where he studied society, human interactions, and developed a strong understanding for the way people think and operate. It was shortly after finishing up his studies that Liam began working on Time Doctor, which now serves more than 83,000 customers worldwide, including companies like Apple, Verizon, PwC, and more. In this episode, Liam and I talk about how he started Time Doctor, the surprising way he stumbled into the feature their early users actually cared about most, and how they made the decision to double down on what those customers were telling them, rather than only trying to build a product they thought people wanted. We cover the ins and outs of what it takes to start a remote company, why Liam believes remote working is the way of the future, and how being remote impacts employee happiness. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Liam Martin. Liam, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm pumped to chat with you today. And, you know, getting this little half hour of your time feels like an honor because you're insanely busy. You run two SaaS companies, Time Doctor and Staff.com, in addition to organizing the Running Remote Conference, the world's largest conference for building and managing remote teams. But before we get into all of that today, I want to take a step back in time. Where are you originally from?
I am originally Canadian, and I am actually still Canadian, although I travel quite a bit. I probably spend about 6 months in Canada and 6 months abroad on average. Like I'm currently in Florida. I've been here for the past week doing a product mastermind. So bringing in a couple designers, couple product people, couple sales people, marketing people, and devs, and then figuring out what product features we're going to launch over the next year. And then after that, I'm in Mexico for about 6 weeks, basically until Canada isn't cold anymore. And then I'm going to head back to Canada for a couple months.
Very smart. And, you know, speaking of cold Canada, in my research before our conversation here, I saw that you were actually an internationally ranked competitive ice dancer at one point in time. How did you land yourself
you did
in
your
this
homework.
Sport? How did you find yourself in this sport?
By the way, I commend you on your homework. I think I've done like 200 podcasts and I think only about 10 or 20 have caught that one. So yeah, I was in hockey and I remember I was going into figure skating to become a better hockey player. And then at around the age of 13, they said, hey, you know, you can keep doing the hockey thing or you can skate with these girls that are wearing like little dresses and stuff. And I went with the girls and I didn't look back. It was a good decision for me long term. And it was great. Learned discipline. Actually, right now when I look at resumes, I will look for some form of discipline inside of their upbringing. So whether that's competitive sports or whether they joined the military or whether they had a really crappy job at McDonald's, I look for something like that to see whether they have the discipline to be able to basically grind out work in the future inside of our organization. And I learned that lesson from competitive sports, which is understanding failure is probably one of the best ways to be successful in your life. And I think that people that are not exposed to that as quickly as possible, like in competitive sports, as an example, they end up not being very successful inside of our organization anyways.
Oh, 100%. I think that applies to many things in life and in your professional career as well. And man, did you choose a technical sport as well? What made you decide to eventually leave ice dancing behind?
It was rigged. So I remember going into, I was during the national championships, it was the year when Sally and Peltier were competing, who were the ones, for people that don't remember back to the early 2000s, they were the ones that ended up getting two gold medal as well as the Russians in the Winter Olympics. And at that point, there was basically, we would go for a competition. There'd be three stages to the competition. We'd do the first two stages and my coach would come in saying, "Hey, I don't think you're going to hit the top five. It looks like the decision has been made." And for me, that was horrible, because you work your entire year up to a certain point and then just the judges have made that decision that you're not going to place where you believe that you're going to place. And entrepreneurship is a lot more egalitarian. We have these points called dollars, and the market defines whether or not you're worthy. I prefer that much more than some judges making decisions.
I agree with you on that one. So, you know, jumping a bit ahead now in your kind of progression through life here, you go on to get your master's in sociology. You know, what made you want to dive into studying, you know, society, human relationships, all of that? What was your interest there?
I'm very interested in people. Usually when I go off on trips, I try to get away from the touristy areas as quickly as possible and just set up, and I usually try to find a nice coffee shop, a couple of nice restaurants, and find an Airbnb somewhere. So I like interacting with other cultures. That was what initially sparked my interest in sociology. And then just later on, it was the ability to be able to understand how humans interacted with each other and how that applies inside of marketing. So I would say my sociology degree is the most useful inside of just even split testing and optimizing how people interact with some of our SaaS products, because I can understand where their mindset is and then give them copy or make changes to the website or the application that can change their mind in certain ways.
Yeah, it's very applicable to that. So now eventually you start working on your first SaaS company, Time Doctor, which today has built this brand that's really kind of being around, you know, the time tracking tool of record for remote teams, from what I see out in the remote landscape right now. What was the original vision that you had for the product when you first started working on it? What was the goal?
It was originally a productivity tool, and that actually is still the nucleus of what the software was. So I am not very good at finishing products or ideas. Mm-hmm. I'm not a very good finisher. I'm a pretty good starter, but not a good finisher. And realizing that I was not good at that, me and my co-founder developed a product to be able to make sure that I could measure exactly how long I was spending on something and when something was finished, and measuring how quickly you could finish something. And that was, in essence, Time Doctor. So that was, you know, that developed into a productivity tool. We recognized very quickly, right now, there's a bunch of people, thousands of customers that use it for their own personal productivity, but that accounts for about 3% of sales inside of the app. So if we had continued down with the individual productivity tool route, we would not be anywhere near what we are right now. And realizing that this was a great tool to be able to measure the productivity of remote workers is where it kind of just blew up and turned into what it is today.
I love that. It's kind of like a story of following the way that you see people using the app, right? Rather than pursuing just what you wanted for yourself.
Absolutely. I think that it's not a bad thing to scratch your own itch, but you have to pay attention to what users want. And just because you like something doesn't necessarily mean that the market will. It's probably a pretty good place to start with, but if you can have other sources of data, always use those as the primary driver of where you want to go with the application.
Yeah. Now, when you first started working on Time Doctor, were there any sort of like big inflection points where you really discovered, hey, we're seriously onto something here? Like, did you have any overnight, 100 customers magically sign up? Or was it kind of like a slow and steady grind?
I would say it's probably a slow and steady grind. There's very few inflection points, I think, with even any app that you really see right now. There were barriers that we crossed in terms of development. So one of the big jumps that we had was integrations. So we initially looked at building a project management software inside of Time Doctor and recognized very quickly that everyone was already using product management software. And what we should do instead is become a really good way to measure what products are being measured inside of those product management software products. So we're a really good time tracker for Basecamp, Asana, Trello, Jira, all of these applications. And instead of building our own project management system, which we did, it's much better for us to be kind of the other side of the table, saying we're going to provide really good time analytics for all of those applications. That was a big aha that we just didn't really recognize, because we came from the assumption of, well, if we build a pretty good project management system, you're probably going to want to get rid of Jira, as an example. But people don't want that. Jira is already built inside of their organization. They're paying $20,000 a year for Jira, as an example. They do not want to abandon that software for something that maybe even is as good, but probably isn't. And it's better for us to work with those companies because you're also not biting the hand that's feeding you. So if you work with Asana and you say, let's create a really deep integration in time tracking, then and Asana promotes you as, I think we're the top three integrations right now on Asana, which is where we're getting a ton of our customers from. Why would we build a project management or task management system to compete with them? Instead, we want to partner with them.
So let's take that partnership with Asana in particular and kind of like zoom in on this, because I think this is a really fascinating sort of growth channel that a lot of companies kind of overlook, because it's easy to overlook. You can think first about, content marketing, paid Facebook ads, like those kinds of channels. But I think integrations are always overlooked by SaaS companies. So how did you go about sort of establishing this relationship with Asana? Now, I'm assuming that you guys had done some work building the integration first before reaching out, or is that not?
Yeah. So I would probably say prove yourself. And the best way to be able to work with one of these companies is build the integration yourself. So we have a bunch of companies that are now integrating into us, and they'll integrate their app into what we're doing. And then we'll all of a sudden see on our analytics, whoa, there's a lot of referral traffic from Bittrex. Bittrex integrated into us just recently, which is a company out of Europe that does project management. And then we're thinking to ourselves, man, okay, look at all these referrals. Whoa, we're getting conversions directly from these guys. And they're already on our radar, and then they show up. And we're really happy to see them when they actually show up. So we did exactly the same thing with Asana. And another big integrator for us is TransferWise, which is basically a way to be able to move money internationally for very low rates. And we have a deep integration inside of our payment module. So when we ended up reaching out to TransferWise, they were like, whoa, you're one of our top affiliates. We would love to be able to work with you in a deeper way. So get yourself out there, generate a couple sales for that company, and then they'll be very excited to be able to bend over backwards. I can tell you right now, if a company generates 10, 20 sales for us per month, that means I send my partnership manager down to meet with you. We figure out what kind of projects we can work on together. Like, there's an entire architecture that we've built inside of our company to be able to make sure that we're continuing to develop those relationships, because 10 to 20 conversions this year can easily turn into 1 to 200 conversions next year if we properly develop the relationship.
That is such great advice. I think it's so important to start these relationships off by providing value first, right? Because I've been on the receiving end of a lot of pitches where, they're coming in cold without any sort of proof of ability to deliver on what they say they want to deliver on. So I think that's a really smart approach to kind of just like pack the punch first and then reach out afterwards.
Absolutely. Just in my inbox right now, I have 3,452 messages. I have not been paying attention to my email, but I'm just even looking at my email right now. I have at least 10 pitches from people asking for a link, and the email goes into, hey, insert name here. I really liked your article on insert article here. and I would love it if you could link to me because I just wrote the same article on XYZ. And a lot of times I'll throw these guys into Ahrefs and they haven't sent us a link and they haven't even done anything. And the way that you completely reverse that conversation and what we do for link building is we say, hey, we really liked your article. We actually linked to it. We integrated it inside of this article and we've already sent you a link and we'd love to be able to work together and see if we could help promote the article that we wrote that has you in it and see what else we could do. And that, I mean, we're talking multiples better in terms of receiving that campaign than just doing this cold outreach stuff. Because to be honest with you, I mean, I don't know why these linkers don't understand. I get hundreds of these things a week. And at this point, I've literally I've even created hot words that I will automatically just pull them out and drop them into a spam folder because I've recognized that they're just not worth my time. But if you could give me something back, if you could literally just show up with, here, I'm giving you something, that completely changes the conversation.
Yeah. And it's funny that you went to this example too, because this is the exact context that I was thinking of this in. For those that aren't too familiar with link building, it's, you know, essentially marketing strategy to build the authority and credibility of your website by getting links from other high authority websites to point back at you. And, you know, as Liam was talking about, it's not this game where you can just outreach cold email anyone you want and ask for something. You know, if you provide value first, whether it's a form of, you know, in the form of linking to an article of theirs or, you know, sharing something on social media or going out of your way to actually do something meaningful for the person before you reach out, you know, two people right here telling you that that's the way to do it.
Yeah. And even the way that you researched me shows me that you're probably the 1% that actually does pay attention because you did some research beforehand. Whether you had a researcher or something like that, do it. It just shows that you're taking extra attention in what you're doing. And even for me, and not to necessarily use the example, but it makes me feel like, oh, I'm going to trust Ryan in the future a lot more often than anyone else that just sort of, okay, this is a standard guy and we're going to pull in and we're going to answer these standard questions. And it's just, it doesn't require that much extra effort. That's the thing that I find very frustrating is if you can't do it yourself, you could hire someone to basically figure out everything about me in probably 30 minutes and provide a very nice, concise 2-paragraph document outlining who I am as a person. So
yeah,
I find that very frustrating as to how marketing is currently being done now.
I mean, especially though in today's age where, you know, someone like you or I, we have our own stories about ourselves pretty much written online somewhere. It's not that difficult to do a little research.
Absolutely.
Okay. So Liam, you know, at some point you're working on Time Doctor. At some point here, you begin working on staff.com, which is also, you know, sort of branded as time tracking related software. Now, aside from being different brands and appearing to have kind of like a different focus of target market that they serve, what other differences are there between the two tools?
So staff.com is mostly for enterprise. So in essence, if you have more than 100 workers, then staff.com would be the place for you. And below 100 is Time Doctor. But the major differentiator is staff.com was a result of all of our machine learning insights from Time Doctor. So what we can do as an example with staff.com is we can predict with about an 89% accuracy rate whether someone is going to quit their job about 6 months before they do, just based off of all the metadata that we collect. And most of the time it's for HR directors that are really trying to figure out how can I boost up employee retention year over year. So can I predict who is going to quit, figure out if I can save them, and then save that person. It's in essence kind of like if anyone is looking at SaaS, something like Gainsight, which does churn prediction. We in essence do employee churn prediction with staff.com.
That's fascinating. Really cool. But our time is limited here. And I do really want to talk about running remote, the conference sure. that you guys have put on, coming up on your second year for it, right?
Yep, that's it. Yeah. I mean, that came from just absolute frustration about building remote teams and recognizing that there was very little information on how to actually build a remote team. And what I define by that is not necessarily being a digital nomad. When you talk about remote work, the majority of the conversation is about being a digital nomad. That's great. There are dozens of conferences that you can go and check out on that subject. For us, we were really focused on how do we get from 50 employees to 100 and 100 employees to 200 and 200 to 1,000. So what do you need in place to be able to make that work? And who are the current people that are building massive companies in remote work? So we just got this really cool venue. It was a network of tree houses made out of bamboo that you could put about 500 people into. And we ran the first one out in Ubud, Bali. We're going to do it again in Bali. We're actually going to do it on the beach this year, which I think will be very nice. And we're going to go over everything that you could possibly think of as it applies to remote. So all tactics, everyone that is going to be giving a presentation actually has done it and probably has done it multiple times. And that's the big thing that we were focused on, is not necessarily how to go remote, but how do you scale remotely?
Yeah, I like that focus because I feel like there's so much, me coming as a content marketer into this, thinking about it content-wise. Like, there is so much content on going remote and like the individual focus too, like how to be a remote freelancer, stuff like that. But it does seem like there's a big void right now. Yeah, there's a major void right now with how to go from, 50 to 100, 100 to 200, as you said. So this is cool. I'm looking forward to seeing how the conference goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got, just even chatting with some of the speakers, we've got Nick Francis, who's the CEO of Help Scout. He has 95 people. Amir, who's the CEO of Doist, he has about 100 people. And I remember when I was talking to them, they were like, we've been looking for this type of conference for years, because they're both running great teams and they just don't know where to go next. Because even though remote work seems to be getting in the news a lot more often, there were only a few companies right now that I would say are over 1,000 people. I actually could probably you could count them on both hands, the amount of 1,000 plus remote first companies. But a lot of those companies are becoming billion-dollar companies at a much higher rate than everyone else. So my feeling personally is that remote work is going to actually be the business model of the future, just because it makes employees happier and it allows you so much more cost saving than the brick and mortar model. So our feeling is we're very passionate about remote work. The mission statement of our company is we want to empower people to work wherever they want, whenever they want. And we realized that without running a conference, we really can't solve the informational problem that we currently have.
Yeah, I like it. Well, I'm staying tuned. I'm going to watch how it goes. Now, Liam, I have a couple of my frequently asked questions that I've designed to be intentionally short on my end, but your responses do not need to be equally so.
No problem. Hit me.
What is your number one piece of advice to our audience listening here today that wants to build a profitable remote company of their own? What should they focus on?
Outside of going to running remote, I would probably say build processes early inside of the business. Remote companies, the biggest problem that I see is that they treat them like what I call on-premise companies, because on-premise software is crappy. I try to call brick and mortar employees on-premise employees. And when you have a small company of 10 people and they're all under the same roof, you can just tell them how to do things correctly and incorrectly. But when they're distributed in 10 different countries all over the world, you need to build operational procedures, digitize them, and be able to easily communicate that information to all of those different people. And that can only be done through processes. The best place to start on that is to go to GitLab. Dimitri, who spoke last year, who's the co-founder of GitLab, has a 3,200-page process document on everything that you need to know to run GitLab. So if you want to know how to run a sales team or a sales demo, it's in that Git repository. If you want to learn how many shares you're going to get when you join the company, it's in the Git repository. And he encourages everyone to steal as much of that content as humanly possible. So he's actually already done probably 80 to 90% of the work for you. Just go through that document, find the ones that you like, recreate them for yourself, and then you'll have all those processes in place.
That's super smart. All right, well, Liam, this is my last question for you.
Sure.
What would you say has been the best investment you've ever made in the context of growing your business? And this can be in the form of time, money, tools, products, services, or otherwise.
People, absolutely, entirely people. When we ended up getting very serious about hiring people, so we went from kind of one part-time HR person to a team of five HR people, and we have approximately about 100 people in the company. The quality of our people completely changed. And the company then accelerated in suit. So, and I wish I had been wrong on that, because I actually thought you could build a company without top performers. And I know that kind of sounds stupid looking back on it, but it's absolutely true. You get what you pay for 95% of the time. And I would rather have one amazing person than three so-so people.
I love it. Great advice. All right. Well, Liam, thank you for joining us. Can you tell everyone listening today where they can go to learn more about you and everything that you're up to?
Sure. So go to timedoctor.com if you want to try out a free trial of Time Doctor. If you would like to check out Running Remote, go to runningremote.com. And if you want to chat with me, I'm going to choose YouTube because we've just recently started a YouTube channel, which I'm very interested in, and probably a separate conversation, but YouTube SEO is very early. And go to youtube.com/runningremote. And if you put in a comment, I'll definitely respond.
Beautiful. All right, Liam, well, thank you again for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.